Ronananian.
It started out with this loud whining noise going down the road. Had a really deep, like, oh boy, something sounds like it's going to fall out.
I'm your vehicle, baby. You got to have your child. Great God in heaven, you know I love.
The Car Doctor. This electromagnetic viscous coupling, say that three times fast, you'll end up on Jeopardy. It was just the part, which can't be any bigger. I mean, it's the size of the ABS hydraulic control unit from the 08 Expedition. It was $1,600.
Welcome to the radio home of Ron and Anian, the Car Doctor. Since 1991, this is where car owners the world over turn to for their definitive opinion on automotive repair. If your mechanic's giving you a busy signal, pick up the phone and call in. The garage doors are open.
But I am here to take your calls at 855-560-9900.
And now, here's Ronnie.
Hey, start your engines. 855-560-9900. Ron and Andy and the Car Doctor here. Once again, CarDoctorShow.com is the website. That's where you can get more information about this radio show. We are live on the air Saturday afternoons, 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time. This is our 3 o'clock hour for those of you who just might be tuning in. You can also stream the show at CarDoctorShow.com. But more importantly, if you're on an affiliate that takes it on delayed broadcast, you can call 855-560-9900 anytime, really, anytime, and leave a message. And Tom Ray, our executive producer, will call you back and get you in the queue for the next live show. You can talk to us even though we're on delay in your area, because this is when we're live. So you just call 855-560 either during Saturday afternoon, 2 to 4 Eastern time during the live show, or you can call and leave a message, and we will hook you up and talk to you about the whatever your car problem is that's going on. Coming up March 17th, just to mention it, we're going to be live for those of you in the New York area at the Westchester Marriott in Tarrytown, New York. We're going to be doing a remote broadcast from the technician service training, the big event put on there by Jerry Trulia, G. Trulia, and the crew. So they do a great job every year. This is their 15th annual TST big event, so we're going to be broadcasting out of the coat check room. I think that's where we were last year, but it actually worked out well. I was kind of surprised to see that. We were in a little coat check room off in a corner, and we did the radio show right out of that. Got to talk to some industry luminaries, as it were. I know Tom Ray had a good time. Tom was, by the way, did you ever give those people back their coats? You were collecting tips and coats at the same time, I noticed.
No, I stopped off and donated them to the Salvation Army. Well, kept the money.
Kept the money. That's what I would have done. By the way, I never got my cut.
You taught me well.
No, I never got my cut. So, but yeah, we'll be up there the 17th of March. We're looking forward to that.
Well, I'll tell you about your cut.
Yeah.
This year, if you want me to open the doors so people can see you, I expect my cut.
I'll tell you what. I don't think, you know, I was thinking about that when we finalized this week. I don't think anybody knew what the heck was going on. In the sense that people were looking at us going, we got a radio show in the middle of the TSD big event. They just, and because some people came and said, are you really the Car Doctor? No, I'm his lookalike.
They mistakenly mistook the rest of it for the big event. We were the big event. See?
Well, that goes without saying, especially when Tony walks in. Boy, there's a big event. So speaking of which, how are you, Tone?
I'm doing well, thank you.
You know, you're the only board operator. Can I call you a board operator? That won't hurt your feelings or anything?
Yes.
You're the only board operator I know of that has a following that when we talked about you being ill last week, there was conversation on Facebook and other forums about what happens to Big Tony at the Car Doctor. And this week I mentioned that, you know, you're back and you know, they love it when you do that Barry White impersonation. Actually, I'm starting to think Barry White was emulating you. You know, maybe Barry kind of passed through the time curtain and
It's
possible. So, because nobody says scantool like my Tony. Couple of
and
things.
And the number one romantic word when spoken by Barry White. Here we go.
Scantool.
And there it is, ladies and gentlemen. And that's the way it is. Here on the Car Doctor every Saturday, 2 to 4 Eastern time. A little bit of a rambling moment here. Just a couple of things I want to talk to you about. First of all, let me get this out of the way. Herb Cooper. Herb Cooper always has some – and Herb Cooper is one of the smartest guys I know. He's just always got something to say that really gives you a thought. He wrote me an email. Hey, Ron, thought for the hour. How come they can't develop an ice-resistant road surface material so they don't have to put down salt every winter and fill potholes every spring? Well, I think you're missing the point. If they don't have to fill potholes and they don't have salt to corrode the cars, they don't sell cars and they don't have anything for to waste taxpayers' money on. But point taken. I don't know. Now, I will tell you this, that you notice that they've started to, here in North Jersey, they've put down those red strips in the corners when you go around corners. I think that's drainage for when the road is wet to help provide more traction. But it's an interesting thought. Why can't we make better road material to help control the ice and the snow, better, easier, quicker, kinder, and, that type of thing? I want to talk a little bit about parts. I want to talk a little bit about dumb designs because, I just got to call him like I see him. We got to work on a 2016 Ford Transit 250 work van this week. 30,000-mile service and oil change and, things like that. And because it's a commercial vehicle, one of the things that is listed, as a possible service would be to change the trans fluid. So we looked at it for that, and we've decided that the trans is probably going to go to the junkyard with this car with the original fluid in it because there's... I think to change the trans fluid, you have to lift the body off the bracer. I knew I was in trouble when the book time to change trans fluid on a 2016 Ford Transit was 3.4 hours, to change the filter and all. And you look at it, there's a brace underneath the pan, which is basically the front suspension, and you have to get that out of the way to lower the pan. There's just no way to access anything. And as much as I love Fords, and I like Ford, I think Ford makes a great product, I'm not sure what the engineers were thinking. I think they missed it on that one. And I don't understand why, in this day and age, we still don't have a nice big rear-wheel drive van that's easy to service and maintain. One of the things I never understood about vans in general over the years is they're large. There's got to be a better way to design and make things serviceable. I never understood. You want to know what my idea is? Look at a large truck. Look at the Snap-on tool truck. I got this at the Mack tool truck. They show up. They've got a flip nose. You've got those two rubber bands that you take them off, and the nose tilts forward so you can get in there and work on the engine. Why can't they make a van like that, that you can flip it forward and work on the engine and get to everything and just make it so that you're not, it doesn't take a genius to figure out that if you put the body on top of the engine and you can't get access to it, you can't work on it. I mean, hello, duh. You get to 100,000 miles, you've got to start to do everything. I was in diesel class a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, and I was talking to a Ford tech, and he's at a Ford dealer here in the area. And we were comparing notes and telling war stories. And he was telling me about how backed up they are servicing the Ford diesels, the various diesel families that Ford has that are converted into ambulances. They get the commercial chassis and so forth. When a Ford diesel, when anything breaks, he said, and they've got to lift the body off the frame, it's a three-week process to put injectors in, because it's just hours and hours and hours. All the electrical connections, all the things that you start to think about. Look at all the stuff that are in it, that's inside of an ambulance, for life saving, and all those things have to be accounted for and disconnected and reconnected. And what are you going to do when that vehicle body has 100,000 miles on it, being in North Jersey, and it's 3 years old or 5 years old or 7 years old, and the bolts don't want to come out, and everything's good and rusty, and, how are you going to achieve that? And, he said there's a backlog now of servicing the Ford diesels, the commercial chassis, and the dealership because of that, and it's a problem. And I said, I don't understand why they don't make a tilt nose. It would seem to be just so easy. Just really so easy. I want to pick on Toyota for a minute. Had a 2011... See, I'm non-discriminatory. I had a 2011 Toyota Corolla this week that had a bad ignition switch. The lock tumbler got jammed. We had to put a lock cylinder in. An ignition lock cylinder, it's probably about 2.5 inches long. It's maybe an inch in diameter. It's the physical lock cylinder that goes inside the master switch that's inside the column. So it needed a new lock cylinder assembly. And we got one out of Toyota. They were the only ones that made it. None of the local parts houses had it. Nobody in the aftermarket makes it, which might be a good thing. And this little 2x1-inch piece of steel was $262. And I looked at it, and I shook it. No gold dust came out of it. I checked. I wanted to be sure because I thought maybe we were smuggling bullion or something. I thought maybe a little white powder was going to fall out of the inside. Like, you know, what are we doing? I didn't get it. You know, and it just it slowly puts, you know, I look at that, and it just tells me it slowly puts the price of auto repair out of the reach of so many people, and it's sad. You know, by the time you're done, you buy the lock cylinder, you've got to send it off to the locksmith, get it, you know, get it recoded so that you have two of the same keys, because Toyota can't do that. See, Ford, to their credit, I give credit where credit is due. There was a couple of years of Ford where you can give them the VIN, and GM does this too, and you can key code everything the same when you order it new. So, you know, you get the same lock combination that you had when you purchased the vehicle. Toyota, uh-uh. So now you would have two sets of keys. One would open the door and one would turn the ignition. You know what? That would just drive me absolutely crazy, even though that's the way cars were in the 70s on a lot of things. So by the time you get done doing the lock cylinder, getting things coated, you had a dolly and you know, get the car in the shop because you can't get the car to start with. You know, $900 later, you've got a lock cylinder that the car will start and run and turn and do what it's supposed to do. So, you know, you look at the price of cars, and I keep thinking, I had an answer the other day in my head. I said, I wonder if we'll ever achieve the point, and I'm being serious here, where when the car dies, will you just leave it on the side of the road? You won't own it, right? It'll be a rental. And, you know, I want to be the guy that drives that the scrap vehicle. I'm thinking they're going to have like a giant vehicle that's going to roll along, suck the car up, shred it, recycle it, and they'll just deliver you another car, plastic, molded, injected, you know, printed vehicle that will send you on your way. So just some nonsensical ravings from a lunatic mind, I guess. But that was the week in auto repair. That's what got me through the week. Just a lot of strange things that I saw that made me scratch my head. Just poor design and expensive parts, and you can see that we are headed for we're headed for the abyss in terms of auto repair. And you really got to start thinking about what you're doing and how you're going to do it, because ever so much more cars are fast becoming a lifestyle if there aren't already, and just very expensive. Bought a rear wiper arm for, and then I'm going to pull over. Bought a rear wiper arm for an 05 Chevy Malibu Max. It's a piece of plastic about 14 inches long with a rubber wiper blade on it from GM. It's the only place you can get it. Nobody makes it. $89. Yeah, I mean, you know, we buy wiper blades, they're 12, 15, 20 bucks. Why a wiper arm? $6. You know, maybe it's $25, $30 for the whole thing. $90. And you can't, you know, it seems that when you find the part that nobody else can make and it's manufacturer only, boy, it sure is expensive. But as soon as somebody in the aftermarket figures out how to make it, it sure gets cheaper, which makes me think, thank God for the aftermarket sometimes. 855-560-9900. The Car Doctor's coming right back. Stay tuned.
Keep Ron's number handy, 855-560-9900, for when you really need advice on your car. Here's Ron.
Welcome back, Ron and Andy, the Car Doctor. Let's see, I just wanted to do this. I've been trying to do this email for a while. I think it's Tom. That's right. Fix it all. Hi, Ron. It seems AC Delco makes two grades of new parts, GM original equipment and professional grade parts. For example, alternators, the original equipment one is $80 higher than the professional, although both are new. There must be a difference in quality. I assume this might be a point of interest on today's program. Tom. You know what, Tom? It is. And actually, I experienced this week as I was picking out parts for the Suburban, because I'm trying to get the best I can. And yeah, evidently, and GM's not alone that does this, but it's probably just a good example of how it works. So there's General Motors original equipment made by Delco, and then there's Delco professional grade, which I always think of as their retail over-the-counter. Not a bad parts line, certainly not the best that Delco makes. And yes, they make a Delco new and then a GM Delco OEOE new starter alternator, and I experienced that picking out a starter for the Suburban. You know, and I think it's a matter of pocketbook. I think it's what can you afford and what are you ready to deal with? And, you know, warranty, I think is, you know, I didn't ask about the warranty, but I thought it was pretty darn the same. But I will tell you this, is the guy taking the starter in and out, doing a starter on an LS Suburban or Silverado, whatever it is you're working on, is no easy task, you know, accessing the wiring and the nuts and the bolts. So I'd rather put the best possible part in, because I would just, you know, it's for the $80, and I think in the case of the starter for the Suburban, it was, I think it was $103 more for the starter that was GM OE original equipment. And, yeah, I figured the first one lasted me 15 years. If the next one lasts me 10, maybe I'll get rid of it in 25 years. Maybe I won't be driving it. Who knows? Maybe there won't be gasoline for it. But in any event, yeah, there's definitely a difference in quality. And you've always got to look at the quality of the part. I always find one of the best things to ask is, if you don't know, ask the guy behind the counter. Hey, what's your better line? What aren't you having problems with? And certain lines of parts, and I should point that out too, certain lines of parts will work better, you know, have clunkers in them, things that just don't work, and, you know, they have some stuff that works really well. And that's just the way it is. But buying auto parts, I've said it for years, is like picking a salad. You got to be a chef. You got to know what lettuce, tomatoes, and cucumbers work, because you put some bad parts in there, you're going to get indigestion. So let's go over and talk to Mike in Donella, New Jersey, who wants to talk about self-driving cars. Fast becoming my favorite topic, Michael.
Yeah, and, I know that, Ron. Yeah, we were talking about that last week. I guess you and Tom went off the air with that.
Yeah.
He and I got to talking about it before. But I got two comments real quick, and then I'll talk about that. My father had a Mercedes one time. It was a 280S, one of the worst cars ever. Six-cylinder, 110 horsepower. We had to replace the windshield wipers. Guess how much they were back in 1974?
$200?
No. They were $38 a piece, but you could go out and get a pair of Anco blades for...
$3. Yeah.
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 So that's it. And my mom's Volvo fuel injection messed up because of some water in the gas.
What's that?
It cost her $150 a pop for a 77 Volvo 240 to have fuel injection put back in there.
I think my concerns with self-driving cars, Michael, you know, you start talking about the cost.
Yeah, we're going to do that too.
Yeah, well, and you're right. And, you know, your comments on what things cost then versus now. And now things are just so out of control. Lock cylinders, $300. ABS control units, $1,500. All-wheel drive coupling, $1,600. You know, we're just starting to see some insane numbers. But as I learned this week, right, a replacement Suburban, $70,000. So do you throw $4,000 or $5,000 in parts at that 15-year-old Suburban? That's, you know, it doesn't even have 60,000 miles on it. Yeah, it's worth it.
I was concerned about the self-driving cars in that, let's say you put salt on the road, that covers up the lines, the camera or the apparatus won't read it. So you're in trouble.
Well, big time. And I'll tell you what, I got some comments about that and some other thoughts on self-driving cars. But let me pull over and do this. Ron and Annie, the Car Doctor, will return right after this. Don't go away. 855-560-9900. The Car Doctor's 24/7 phone number. Stay tuned. We'll be back right after this.
So you don't forget to call for car advice done right. 855-560-9900. Now, back to Ron.
Yeah, we're talking with Mike from Donella, New Jersey. Michael, you're still there?
Sure.
So, yeah, you bring up some good points. So the self-driving car goes down the road, and it's snowing out, and it can't see the white line in the road because of ice or snow. And you've got to hope that they're going to trigger it off of a GPS or a satellite or something like that. But... you know, I always go back to, you ever drive down the road and, you know, you're a passenger in a vehicle and you're talking on your cell phone and all of a sudden service drops out? You know, what's what? The car is going to stop. The car is going to go, wait a minute, hold the boat. You know, I mean, I can see, like, you know, I think about, like, you know, the Westerns, right, where, you know, the 7th Cavalry, and we're charging down after the Indians or whatever it is. Wait a minute, hold it. The horse has got to stop and take water.
You know what I think is going to happen is that, you know, have you ever tried, you ever driven the semi-autonomous cars yet?
No, I've seen them. I have not sat in one.
Okay, I've been in one, and my friend let me touched the wheel while it was driving, and he went outside the lane on purpose, and it jerked the car back into the lane and tugged on the wheel. And I said to myself, now, if you ignore it, what happens? It will fight you. The wheel will fight you. And if the autonomous cars lose you know, with the road, they lose contact or whatever they have, what happens? Does it revert back to regular steering?
Well, and steering is an issue. Listen, let's not overthink this. Let's go back to basics. Let's say it's a 68-degree day and the sun is shining and the bluebird of happiness is flying around.
Right.
And you're driving down a perfectly flat, straight road at 65 miles an hour, and the right front tire blows out.
Right.
You have a tire failure. If there's no steering wheel on the car, because it's self-driving.
Right.
Or let's say there is a steering wheel on the car, but you're not behind the wheel. You're in the back seat. How are you going to get that car off the road? How are you going to react? How are you going to, you know, there's a split second of, uh-oh. Before you do it, you say it, and then you do it.
Well, you know what's going to have to be is, my thought is, you know how they have those sensors in the car if you get your license back after you've been drinking, you have to blow into this thing?
Right, the breathalyzer.
All right. So that's going to have to sense whether somebody's sitting there, because what happens if they're not sitting there and that scenario comes up that you developed? There'd be curtains for everybody.
Well, yeah. You know, I think self-driving cars have a place, Michael. You know, I think for those that can't get around as easily as the rest of us for whatever reason, you know.
I love it, but I'm not going to drive a Ford Escape. Give me a Corvette.
Right, well.
With a stick.
You know,
they're
listen.
They're not going to do it.
You know, the question becomes, you know, would I put my 95-year-old mom in a car and say, take her to the doctor?
Oh.
You know, only if, you know, mom wanted to check out that day, maybe. It's, you know, depends. So, you know, it's like, depends on her mood. You know, and, you know, let's face it, I guess as we all get up there in age, sometimes we're all like, okay, it's time to go. But, you know, it's just, does it have its place? And I don't know that we're ready for it. You know, you're driving on the highway again at 65, 70 miles an hour, and that vehicle has a problem. You've got to get it off the road.
But, Ron, you see these idiots when the snow comes? It looks like they never drove in it before. They're spinning out, doing all kind of crazy stuff.
Right.
Maybe an autonomous car for somebody like that would be great.
Well,
because it would just keep them under control.
But to that point, you know, I wonder, and I'm sure, Mike, I'm sure that somebody's going to try and invent it if they haven't already, you know, to make a self-driving car drive through a blizzard. But,
oh, yeah.
You know, the driving conditions are not always 68 degrees, sunny, warm, bluebird
right.
of happiness. You know, it's there are some lousy weather conditions, for lack of a better way to say it. Never say lousy. It's a bad word, I was always taught. So there are some lousy weather conditions that just create, you know, human judgment, and you've got to,
you got to know what's going on.
You got to know what's going on, and I don't think we're ready for self-driving cars on a larger scale.
Quickly, how's the Monte Carlo coming?
It's getting there. I'm Rust-Oleum painting the rear axle and the floor pan, because that car is going to be more about protection. It's going to be out in all kinds of weather than making it a pretty car. It's going to be a nice everyday driver.
So they never made it with a stick, did they? It was just automatic.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, actually, they did. They're rare. They didn't make a lot of them, but they did make some early first generation Montes with four speeds.
70, right?
Yeah, they made 70, 71s, and they made some 72s.
Yeah, and then the body style changed because my mom had a Cutlass like that.
Yeah, the body style changed in 73, so they did make those. Listen, I'll leave you with this thought. You know, we talk about self-driving cars and what it's going to take to fix them.
Yeah.
We live in a society today that New York lawmakers, I read this morning, I don't know if it was real or not. I think it was a real news story. I know we all have issues with fake news.
Well, I'll look it up.
But there was a story today about that New York state legislators are trying to enact a bill to cause Tide to change the shape and look of their soap pods. Because the teenagers today are
eating them.
They're eating laundry detergent.
I tell you what, I'd give them something to put in their mouth they'd never be able to eat again.
Well, you know, when I was 17 years old, all right, I was fixing cars at 17. I was fixing cars at 15. You know, and you know, this generation is, we have to teach this generation not to eat laundry detergent, and then we're going to have to put them in self-driving cars. You know, where's the problem here? I think we're going to have to create self-driving cars to carry the next generation forward because they're too stupid to do anything else. And
talk,
I hate to be
washing
harsh.
Out your mouth with soap. Come on.
I hate to be harsh like that, but holy cow! If you're not smart enough to know the danger of eating soap, you sure as hell can't fix a car, and you sure as hell shouldn't be driving one. But anyway, you know, far
it's always a pleasure talking to you. You always make my day.
You know what? I'm trying to be the Bob Grant is gone. Maybe I'll take his job. 855-560-9900. We'll be back right after this. Straight ahead, everybody. Wow, where did that one come from? He kind of snuck that in there.
I like that.
Did you?
That was really nice.
You know, I'm really surprised he hasn't played a lot of Barry White today.
No, but, you know, the moment, Love on a Two-Way Street was nice. No.
I don't need to play Barry White. I'm sitting here with him.
Well, that's true. I've come to that conclusion. But, you know, to go back, before we go to the next call, to go back to the last comments about eating soap, all right, and I realize this is off the realm of auto repair, but in a way, it's not, because it's a mark on society. You can't find technicians today. You can't train technicians fast enough. All right? If we have to worry about kids eating soap to the point that we have to put a law in place to keep them from doing it. You know, in 1944, a day at the beach for a 17-year-old was at a place called Normandy. All right? In 1974, a day at the beach for my generation was Seaside Heights, New Jersey. All right? You know, this generation, I don't know if they could find the beach, you know, much less get there, because none of them want to drive and they just want to go down there in a self-driving car. They want somebody to do it for them. And I'm not, you know, I probably shouldn't condemn an entire generation, but we're at the point where we've got to worry about the kids today eating soap, and we're going to pass a law for it? Whew, something's wrong. We don't need self-driving cars. We need self-fixing cars, because nobody's going to be able to do it.
Well, like when we were talking off the air, like I told you, there are 49 other states not passing this law. Tide will just pull out of New York. You know, it's real simple.
That means more people will be driving. We'll have more cars to talk about. There'll be more broken cars. That might be the way to go. Where are we going here? Let's go over to Norwood, New York. Is that Colm? C-O-L-M?
It is, sir, and I appreciate your time.
How can I help,
Ron?
You? Yes, sir.
I'd like to make an unusual request. Mm-hmm. My medical condition prohibits me from writing because my right hand, my only one really, suffers intermittent, unpredictable shaking, and my script is unintelligible every so often. But the letter that I would like to share with other people, whoever's listening, about unintended acceleration and autonomy, it is now 7 years old this month, and it was written to one of the two publications, Automotive, that I buy still, have been with them for 20 years and more. And this one is a niche, limited interest for one vehicle only, published privately in Atlanta, called the TDR. And its main purpose is information on Dodge, Cummins, Rams, all of them. I'm on my old one now, which does not die. But the issue at the end of 10 and through 2012 was brought to the public's attention strongly by the crash of a Lexus, I think in California, containing a retired mentioned, was soliciting info on self-driving and autonomy and unintended acceleration. Well, I wrote this, and it is a brief letter, and every word is to the point from my own firsthand through my automotive career. I'd like to share it, if I may.
Real quick, we've got about a minute and a half.
Oh, it won't make it. Oh. But the writer that stimulated my letter, he had a Dodge Ram, age and equipment unknown. The owner worked at a municipal airport, and because the guy is a pillar of the magazine, he got the request, help me. So we went out to the airport, whatever state, and said, try to start it. And this Air Force vet was looking at the rotating radar screen above the tower, said, try to start it right now. It did not even crank. So wait 15 seconds for the screen to rotate away, and start it. It started without trouble. Every time the screen faced away from the hood. Well, this triggered my article. Let's see. After I got and read 71, issue 71, I was asking why DOT Secretary Ray LaHood categorically denied, dismissed all electronic causes for the recent and largely Toyota-focused events. Later that day, after brief thought, I had another. I had an answer. If the global OEMs made all consumer vehicles runaway proof, unquote, a new compact car would cost six figures.
Well, yeah, and you would also see, well, suffice it to say in the time we've got left that, yeah, self-driving cars are going to be a problem from the perspective you present and also from what they're going to create in terms of unreliability. Colm, it's always a pleasure, sir, and I wish we could have given you more time. I wish we had more time to give. 855-560-9900. We're back right after this. Welcome back. Ron and Andy, the Car Doctor, 855-560-9900. It's Car Doctor's 24/7 number. Quick story. We've got visiting dignitaries here in the green room, as we call it here at the Car Doctor studio, and Mom's here today. So I just went out at the last break, and she said, how's the show going? Are you done? I said, no, we got one more to go. You know, we got one more little segment. And she said, I heard the part where the car caught fire. So at least she's listening, right? And she said, what happened? She goes, did that really happen? I said, yeah, Ma, I was working on a car. I had my back to it, and it started smoking. And, you know, I didn't see flame, but it was about to because you could see the smoke was increasing in intensity. And my 95-year-old mother looked at me, and she said, your job is dangerous. I said, well, to a point. Do you think you should change? What? She said, maybe you should go do something else. No, I don't think so, Ma. I think I'm kind of cast into this. I don't think that's going to change anytime soon. So, but she said, but I worry about you. You know what? Once a mother, always a mother. You know, at least that's what makes moms moms, right? So, Mom, this show's for you. But, you know, just to let you know that. Hey, Larry had called in a couple of weeks ago with the 96 Dodge Ram, and he sent me an email. Hey, Ron, thanks for the wiring diagram, courtesy of the folks at All Data. It ended up being the control head shorted out on the low two speeds. I appreciate the help. Good. I'm glad that worked out for you. Let's see what this is about. This is a conversation. Yeah, just a reminder again, March 17th, we're going to be at the Westchester Marriott, TST.org. Look up Technician Service Training or TSTseminars.org. We're going to be up there doing the radio show live from the TST big event to see what that's about. So you can look for us there March 17th. We'll be live out there on the floor or in the red check room or the rain check room, the coat check room, whatever that might be. A lot of conversation this week about parts, and we know what parts were a problem. And you know what? I will say this, too. We were talking about parts before and finding parts. The BoschAutoParts.com website, go out to BoschAutoParts.com. The nice thing Bosch is doing, besides the fact that, you know, the quality of their parts and they're made to a specific standard, and that's, you know, we talk about self-driving cars and the problems with them and the quality of parts on them. You know, if you've got a company like Bosch behind them, and, you know, I'm sure there'll be plenty of Bosch componentry on self-driving cars in the future if there aren't already there in terms of, you know, what they're working on. You know, you go out to the website, BoschAutoParts.com. At least you can look things up and you've got faith in what they're making in terms of the quality and what they're putting forth because they build it to a certain standard. And you know, you need companies like that in terms of, you know, bringing product to market, because it's going to get to be very, very expensive. My fear is that somehow you're going to see cars get to the point where they're so expensive to repair that less and less people can repair them, less and less people can afford them. And I don't know, it might not happen in my lifetime, but I wonder if there'll be a shift. You know, you look to the future and you try to see 10, 20, 30 years down the road, and, you know, you wonder whether or not there will be quality auto parts. And so you hope for survival of all of this. And, you know, I look to a company like Bosch, like I did so many times this week, for parts for the Suburban and some of the other vehicles we were working on. And, you know, it's good to have them there. It's good to know that somebody's got our back for the time being. So let's hope that stays for a long, long time. Well, where did 2 hours go? 2 hours just kind of went screaming by. I want to thank Mr. Atwood for showing up this week. We appreciate that. Mr. Ray for being here and doing the job that he does. And once again, to all of you, I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor, reminding you, the mechanics aren't expensive. They're priceless. See ya.